is going to be a random episode because I want to finish up chapter 2, but I haven't quite finished studying it yet. So, or gathering sources and all that yet for chapter 2 of The Hero with a Thousand Faces. So instead, I'm just going to kind of have a random, let's talk about anarchy. So I've got my copy, and I decided to just sit down and do this off the cuff with no notes or anything. So what I wanted to talk about was this whole idea, or the ideal of anarchy. It's something that has fascinated me for a long time, and of course that's what we've been talking about through all of these episodes. We've been talking about anarchy through literature. Anarchy through the experience of an author, another human, be they anarchist or not. So, and I have kind of done an episode in the past where I talk about how I think all humans are anarchists in some way, and how I don't really think anarchy is a real thing. Not really, anyway. It's a word to define a certain ideology, like any word is, or a certain idea. But at the heart of it, we are all individuals. We are all humans. And I've kind of gone through that already. But I look out on the landscape. I've been watching a lot of like little clips and videos of what's portrayed as anarchists, not just on like big media, but also on things like YouTube and LBRY or Odyssey or whatever you want to call it. And the portrayal to me, it seems like it's to set apart, these are anarchists and everybody else is normal, or these are real anarchists. So the red and black flag anarchists, the anarcho-communists, anarcho-syndicalists, yes, I know they're different, but they are kind of portrayed as the anarchists. When in reality, to me, I don't think you need a flag to be an anarchist. I don't think you need to call yourself an anarchist to be an anarchist. What I think really the root of anarchy is just simply living your life. And that's why I really attach myself to sort of the mindset of the agorists. Although there are a lot of people out there that claim to be agorists, or, you know, the that sect of anarchists, and they're really more, they really all fall in line with this market capitalism style ideology or philosophy. I really attach to them because they seem to be living their philosophy. And that's what I kind of wanted this episode to be about, living your philosophy. Because a lot of people can claim, you can claim that you believe one thing to be true, or another thing to be true. And you can claim that you believe one thing to be false, or another thing. But if you don't live it out, if you don't really, truly live the anarchy that is within your soul, if you don't truly live the freedom within you, then it's all just words. It's all just wasted breath. If you really want to live out your philosophy, and if this whole concept, this whole philosophy really means anything to you, then you should really try to implement it in your own life. And that's what we were kind of doing before I launched into Joseph Campbell. I was trying to kind of assign homework, so to speak, to anyone listening, to try to implement something into their lives that is, well, that that emulates their philosophy, that brings their philosophy not from the back of their minds into action. And I guess this is a call to action then. It's a call to action to, if you believe, for instance, if you believe that capitalism is the greatest evil, then I would call you to action. So you try fighting it for once. Instead of going out and buying your iPhone. And everybody makes this claim. They say, well, look, they claim to be communists, but look, they've got their iPhones, they've got their iPads, they have their fancy clothes, and they have their privilege. The privilege of a wealthy class. Because so many are, even if you don't think so, even if you are living paycheck to paycheck, you are still part of the wealthy class in the world. And so try to live it. You still have a smartphone. You still probably have some sort of a computer. You still have access to electricity and Wi-Fi. You still have all of these things. And I've been watching kind of the degeneracy on the news lately. And I realize that so many people cry out that they don't get what they want or they don't get what they need. But if you look back, for instance, I've been watching a documentary that's set in the 70s. And you look back, and you can tell, even though people were fairly well off in the 70s, I mean, much better, you know, much better kept with much more wealth than the rest of the world of that time. And this is in the United States. None of them really looked gaudy, rich. None of them really embodied this sense of privilege. And we're not talking about white privilege. We're not talking about male privilege. We're not talking about any of that. This is generic privilege that you have if you're an American or a European, or if you're, well, if you're anyone who, even though you're poor, you have everything you need. And need is very important there. Because you may think that you need the internet, but you don't. Not to survive. You say, well, I need a smartphone, or I need a phone to get a job. And that's not true. At least, maybe you can't get some fancy job if you don't have a way for someone to call you. But really, you can figure out a way. You don't need these things. You don't need the latest iPhone. You don't even need a cheap knockoff Android phone from Walmart or somewhere. What you need is food and water. And now that might sound different to different people. What is food? Because someone might say, well, I can't go out to eat. I don't have enough money for that. I can't go out and get... That's a luxury. Americans have turned this into this idea of going out to eat as if it's an everyday thing. And it is an everyday thing for so many people. They've turned this idea of going to McDonald's as something that everyone should be able to do. And for the most part, most people are able to say, go and order some sort of a cheeseburger, I think. It's been a long time since I've been, so I'm assuming they still have a dollar menu. And you can order a few things and have a nice little high-calorie, low-nutrient meal. And so most people can. And you only spend, what, like $3 or and some change for tax? And you can have a decent little meal. But that's a luxury, you see. Or it's something that should be thought of as such. Because really all you need is some sort of food, some water, and some way to keep the rain off of you. Shelter, as it were. And I hear a lot of, this is another thing I keep hearing, is, well, we have all of this, all of these houses that are empty, and that's true. And you can blame that on the stimulus of the 80s, 90s, 2000s, and current times. The incentives given to banks to approve housing or building projects, but they're building these houses that are all too expensive for most people to buy. But it's a way to keep the Ponzi scheme going. They keep interest rates low, so banks will loan out more money to build houses that no one's going to live in. But I hear all the time, well, I can't afford my apartment. And you know, I was in that situation at one point where I couldn't afford my own apartment. And what I ended up doing was finding a way to get out. I moved out of Dodge, as they say. I moved out. I used to live in Louisville, Kentucky. And my apartment was so extremely expensive. I realized, though, that I was working as a security officer at the time. And I realized, though, that I could just pick up and leave at any time. And so can you. Anyone can. You can pick up and leave. And I moved out of the area, out of the big city. And you know, if you move into a smaller town, you can find an apartment for $200 a month. Easy. They're everywhere. It's these things that I continually think about. And if, so instead of complaining, you take action. And it's the same with anarchy and the philosophy behind anarchy. Instead of complaining, say you've got a local government who keeps doing whatever it is. It's let's say they keep spending money. Like, okay, here. In my town, our local government approves 80% of their budget. 80% of the budget increases have gone to the police. This is a small town of like 40,000 people, I think, something like that. Maybe 50 now. So 80% of all budget increases go to the police. Does it go to their salaries? No. Does it go to their pensions? No. What does it go to? Well, they bought military equipment like APC, armored personnel vehicles. They bought they have two tanks of all things. Now these are like, well, they're just armored tanks, not the big, huge cannon type tanks that you think of whenever you think of tanks. They fully outfitted the police department in military-style gear. They got all brand new patrol cars. I mean, they've gotten so many things for the police. And to do that, they increased taxes by a lot, in fact. And what have I done to combat this? What have I done to live out my philosophy? Well, I've emailed them. I've talked to people about protesting against this or possibly putting some sort of an end to this. Because I don't like it. Nobody likes it. And we got a kind of a group talking. And as the group grows, now, see, here's the problem. You can't just confront your local overlords and say, hey, this isn't right, stop this, or else. You have to get a community together. And this is the whole point. This is actually the incident that convinced me and that made me realize that you can't be just a lone anarchist. You can't just be a lone member of the community, of the wider community, and think that you can make any difference. No, you have to get a group together. You have to build an actual community amongst yourselves. You have to get like-minded people together. And together, maybe we can put a stop to it. Now, so far, there's not nearly enough of us to do anything, and the city government won't even listen. In fact, I'm not even allowed anymore at the meetings, the budgetary meetings, because every time I go, I always have something to say. And of course, I'm respectful. I wait until it's time for questioning, and I always have at least one question. But now, of course, I'm no longer invited, because my questions are, why are we spending money on military equipment for city police? Why are we spending so much money on things like this when we can't even fix a pothole on the road? When it takes you almost 11 years to build a 1 mile stretch of road in the city, and spend millions and millions of dollars on it too, by the way. Why are we outfitting our police with military gear? And that's kind of the community effort that I've tried to... Now, I won't claim to be the leader of any such effort. I'm merely a member of the community. And there are others who are... They have better skills at directing the attention of our small little community to help try to put an end to this. Because, really, think about a city... Or at, well, I guess it's technically a city. 40,000 people, or 50,000. Think about this. Why would they need tanks, military gear? Why would they need all of these things for a city whose crime, like, the crime rate is not... It's not high by any means. I mean, it's not nothing. But it's just like, it's almost like they're just getting toys for their enforcement agents. For the agents of the state, as it were. They're getting these toys for the agents that keep the citizens at bay. And these are fun toys for them. And I'd like to see it put a stop to it. But there's more an anarchist can do to live out their philosophy. Because that's the whole goal of... Well, no, that's not the goal of this podcast. The goal of this podcast is to help people kind of get interested in books by philosophers that have an anarchist bent to them. The more sessions, as it were, that I record, the more I realize that that's what this is. This is a podcast to... We go through books, I've been picking all of them. I have had one suggestion that I can't wait to get to, but we'll get to that when we do. Once we're done with Joseph Campbell, we will be covering... Well, okay, I'll just tell you. We'll be covering the Unabomber Manifesto. I read it years and years ago. I can't remember, and I don't really remember it at all. I remember how interested I was in it for a long time. Not in some sort of a sick way where I want to go blow up a whole bunch of people, but in a way that it's like you read it and you think, what is behind the mind of this, or what is the mind behind these words? And how revelatory it is. There are people out there like this. And I'm not claiming that the mind of the Unabomber is something... I think he was probably relatively off his rocker, but that's what people say about every anarchist, I think. At least that's what the greater society would say. But we gotta live our anarchy. We got to live our philosophy. So I don't know what your philosophy is, but for me, I lean real hard towards the agorist side. And that's why I've started, I've bought up some Bitcoin. Because I'm kind of buying into the idea of an alternative currency. and this is sort of my experiment to see how viable it is, because I can look at it all I want, I can read about it all I want, but until I actually do it, and I own some Bitcoin, which I do now, I can't really experience it and see how it would work and really understand it. So, and another thing that the agorists have sort of taught me is, so I'm not really a big gun guy, but I do think that you should be allowed to own a gun. Obviously, any anarchist who tells you that guns should be banned, well, they're just a statist claiming to be of one mind with other anarchists. Because the banning of weapons, the banning of tools of self-defense, the banning of tools of war against something like a state, or a state power, or an oppressive power. The banning of these things are only meant to hold down the anarchist, to hold down the individual, to hold down an individual community, to hold down an entire society. And so I've kind of gotten into the 3D printing world of guns now. I have ordered a 3D printer, but it is on back order. It didn't show that on the website whenever I ordered it. It's an Ender, I believe it's an Ender 3. And as soon as I placed the order, I got an email saying that it was backordered. So it will be a few months before I get it, I think. But I did order one because I wanted to experiment with it. I wanted to see what you can make in your own home. And you only need one specialized tool, and that is a 3D printer. And then I kind of delved into that and found out that they have a machine that you can make your own filament with. And it's a pretty simple machine from what I understand, but it recycles shavings from projects that you've already done, and it recycles things like, you can recycle plastic bottles, all kinds of things. Now, I think that would probably compromise the density and all that, but still, it's just the concept that you could recycle your waste, or at least your plastic waste, and make it into a filament that you can use to build anything, really. These are the things that I've been trying to implement into my own life to affirm my philosophy, to test out my philosophy. And so, let's say you're an agorist as well, or you claim the agorist philosophy. I don't think this is something I want to draw a line on, and I don't think people are anarcho-capitalists. I don't think people are anarcho-communists. I don't think people are agorists. I think people utilize the philosophy of agorism, utilize the philosophy of anarcho-capitalism and anarcho-communism in their own lives. And it's important to distinguish that. As we've seen from the hero with 1,000 faces, in mythology, because that's what we all live. We live through our own perception, which can become myth to other people. It can become this mythical story. And we're all telling ourselves a story. The story of our own lives. And so, what story are you telling yourself? Are you telling yourself the story of an agorist, or an anarcho-capitalist, or an anarcho-whatever, communist, syndicalist, whatever it is? What story are you telling yourself? And I hope by now you understand that by me saying this, what story are you telling yourself? I'm not saying that it's a falsehood that you tell yourself. I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying that it is a, whenever I say the myths that we tell ourselves, the mythos that we build around our our own lives, or at least the story of our own life. It's not a falsehood, it is a perception, like we've been talking about since the very beginning. It is a worldview. And the hero of your story is yourself. Or at least the protagonist, I hope. And so, you have to build this story. You have to build it up into something. You have to build it up, and you can't just theorize. You can't just tell the story. Otherwise, it does become a falsehood. You say you're an anarcho-communist, but you live every day as a consumerist. You live every day as a vain, conceited individual. If you live every day and you complain that you can't go to McDonald's or you can't quote-unquote afford food, that means you're not changing something about your own story so that these things are possible. And it may sound callous to say it like that, but the truth of the matter, the fact of the matter that I have seen and I have lived with where I was making minimum wage in a big city where everything was expensive, but you can still live. You just have to cut out pretty much everything that has to do with entertainment or fun, really. I mean, well, not really anymore because you can get all those things for free, but you have to make choices and cut these things out. So if you're telling yourself this story that you're an anarcho-communist, don't live in the consumerist world or in the consumerist mindset. Quit buying all these things. Quit buying your iPhones. That's what really bugs me. What really, really gets me is you say, I'm an incom, and I fly that black and red flag high, and I hate the capitalists, I hate the dirty billionaires, I hate all these things, and yeah, down with all these things. I'm going to go march in these protests against the billionaires. I'm going to hate on Elon Musk and all these billionaires, Bezos, all these guys. I'm going to hate on them on Twitter. I'm going to tweet at them. And man, isn't that a great thing? Man, I'm really accomplishing a lot. But in real life, you're sitting in your apartment, tweeting from your iPhone or your fancy expensive Android phone or whatever it is, or your MacBook or your gaming computer, as it were. And you're there, you're tweeting, you're posting things on Facebook, you're doing whatever it is you're doing, and you're fully immersed in a capitalist and a consumerist society. And you have fully immersed yourself, and you think you don't have a choice. You say, I don't have a choice, I have to own these things. I have to use these things, because these are all the only things that I can have. But in reality, that's not true. There's this thing called free software, you see. And I know, I tend to go towards this every time, but there's this thing called free software. It is community-built software. There's this thing, there are these things like the PinePhone and the Librem 5. There's this project called Postmarket OS. If you're so concerned about having a cell phone, perhaps you can buy a cheap Android phone and throw Postmarket OS, a community-built software, a community-developed software. Though in reality, I'm sure it's really just a handful of developers doing the majority of the work. But it's still a community effort. You want to be a communist, where community is your focus, where mutual aid is your focus, don't buy that iPhone. Don't buy that Android phone. Don't put yourself into debt for things like this. Get some I mean, there's so many phones out there, if you have to have one, that you can run Postmarket OS on, that you're going to spend nothing on, comparatively. You're not going to spend $1,000 on a phone for that. And if you're so concerned with these things, don't just go to a march. I mean, sure, going and marching around the streets and yelling, that's great. That does bring awareness, and that's great. But actually implement it in your life. Build a community with those. So you live in an apartment, let's say, or an apartment building, let's say. Get to know your neighbors. That's the first step. Get to know your neighbors well. To the point where you're not just passing them quietly in the hallway, or you're not just passing them and saying hi and being that distant neighbor that's nice, or not nice, for that matter. Get to know your neighbors. Like, really get to know them. Invite them over. You can share a meal together. Maybe even have drinks together. And you can all get together and form just such a community. And it doesn't have to be under the black and red flag that you do this. This is just being a human being and reaching out to those around you and saying, this is my community. The same goes for the agorists, the keyboard warriors who are always posting sick memes and always getting into big arguments. Quit with all that. Sure, you can do that if you want. It doesn't matter, but don't make that the heroic act. You have to go through trials first, you see. And that's what we learned the last chapter that we read of The Hero with a Thousand Faces. To become the hero of your own story, you must go through trials. You cannot just become the hero because you say you are. There's no substance there, you see. There's nothing, in fact. You have to go through the trials. And maybe the trials are something as simple as saying hi to your neighbor. Striking up a conversation. Oh, they're annoying? Well, work on that. It's the same with, and this is me, my mind flitting around, but it's the same with, so my partner is a psychotherapist. And they're always counseling with parents of children. And the parents don't know what went wrong. But you know what I've learned over the years, listening to the stories? To me, they're nameless stories because of confidentiality. I only hear the stories, no names. But listen to these stories, and what I think is, these parents say they don't know what went wrong. They have no idea. Why did their kid do this? So they're in placement somewhere. And 99 times out of 100, well, the story unfolds over a period of 6 months, maybe, or 3 months, or whatever it is. 99 times out of 100, these kids ended up this way, and through their own choices, in a sense, to an extent. But in the end, you find out that these parents raised this kid this way. Things don't just happen to you. Things don't just happen. You just don't happen to be born poor. I mean, sure, you're born into a poor family, but your story doesn't end when you're born. It's only beginning. Your story, it begins with you growing up. And sure, maybe you're poor your whole life. I was. And I'm not exactly rich right now. But I do have a day off, you see, every week now. I didn't have that before. I do have a day off now where I can sit down and record this. But my whole life, I was so incredibly poor. Growing up And this is just an illustration of things don't just happen to you. But growing up, we were always, my mom and dad were always pinching pennies, as they say. They were always looking for a way to not spend more money because they didn't have the money to spend, you see. Whenever they went grocery shopping, the grocery bill, if it hit $25, we were hurting the rest of the week. So we shopped at discount grocery stores, places where you can find food that isn't so great, but it's not so bad either. That's where I learned growing up that cooking food, you can live. If you make all of your own food, you can live on $25, $30 a week for groceries. You can live on that today, although inflation has maybe made that go up to something like $50. Maybe a little bit more, I don't know, but if you don't buy things that are pre-processed, you can live on that. And these are the things I learned. Now, these kids that my partner counsels with, their parents are buying them like $200 pairs of shoes, and they're broke. These are people that they're living off of a government paycheck. They're living off of Social Security. They're living off of these things. But they're able to buy their kid a new iPhone. They're able to buy their kid a new pair of sneakers that cost them something like $200, sometimes more. And they do this on a monthly basis where they spend. And this is the thing, they're spending all of their money. And then they ask my partner, well, we're poor. We don't know how this happened. Why does this always happen to us? Maybe it has something to do with education. I don't know. Maybe it has something. I'm not really sure where it is. My partner has a lot more empathy than I do. And maybe that's a fault of my own. I do recognize that that is possible, but I don't see it as such at this moment. But they're not living. They have this ideal in their mind, much like the agorists and the anarcho-communists and the anarcho-capitalists. Although I think the anarcho-capitalists tend to realize their ideals a little bit more often than any of the others. But they have this ideal in their mind that they are poor. They were born poor and they're always going to be poor. They have this idea that has infected their mind that this is just how it is, and there's nothing they can do. And I want to use that illustration to say this is exactly how you all, well, maybe not all of you, but so many out there that I read about or listen to. I hear the ANCAPs all the time, even though, like I said before, I think many of them have realized it more than others. They're always complaining about things like this. But I never see any of them do anything. I never see anybody do anything, in fact. And the ones we do see, we hail as, these are the heroes of the movement. For agorists, it's Samuel Edward Konkin III, the founder. And he was doing things for the movement. He is the hero of the movement, of the agorist movement. He is the hero. And he's one of the last ones that ever did anything. Now, that's not always true. There's Sal Mayweather, I believe his name is. He ran the podcast The Agora, or he runs. I think it's still going. I'm subscribed to it, I should know. The Agora. He's doing things. So he's another hero of the agorist movement, I think. There are others out there for the agorist movement, and this is the one I've studied most now, more recently, so this is the one that's more fresh in my mind. There are those in the ANCOM community that also are doing things, but when you can count them on your hands, how many there are, and yet there's so many thousands that claim to be anarcho-communists and agorists, and none of them are doing anything. Not at their local level, not in their own personal lives, And that's something that I've been endeavoring in my own life to do. For instance, I have a garden as someone who likes the agorist way of individualism, and I enjoy the concept of growing my own food. Now, it's not a garden that would be sustainable for an entire year of food, but I do have strawberries that will grow year-round. At least that's what I'm told. But anyway, but I started a garden, which hopefully I'll be posting pictures of the produce soon, because the broccoli is almost ready. Well, I think I've got a couple more weeks, but that's almost ready. But that's the first step for me. That's the first step, is I started a garden, and now next year I'll expand it more. And in fact, I'm learning how to, I'm learning how to hopefully gather seeds from each of the plants that I've made, so I don't have to buy the same seeds every year from some corporate entity that sells seeds. I have a peach tree in the back now that I think this year will bear peaches. And I just have a real small backyard. But I've been able to utilize the space well, I think. But that's what I'm talking about, trying to embody things like this. And then also creating having a community. I've been reaching out to my next door neighbors more often. I talk to them now. I've lived here for coming up on 4 years. And for the first 3 years, I never said a word to any of my neighbors. Now, on a regular basis, and it makes it easier because I'm working from home, but on a regular basis, I'm able to talk to my neighbors, discuss things with them, discuss politics, discuss philosophical ideas. We're able to converse about things, and we're building this relationship. And now I'll tell you, I live in a community where almost everyone here is over the age of 60, I believe. And so I know they're not going to be leaving anytime soon. There are a couple of younger people that live here, but most of them are much, much older than me. And these houses are their final purchase, final big purchase of housing, I think. So I'll hopefully be able to know everyone. I've actually been attending, so we have an HOA. It's a very loose organization where there aren't really any rules other than the normal sort of rules that any community would have without an HOA. But part of the benefits of this HOA, which I've been against for years, but one of the benefits is they actually have a meeting every month. And so you can actually go and talk to your neighbors a little bit every month, which is kind of a neat concept. I really enjoy it. Now, I've only been to a couple of the meetings because, well, since the whole COVID epidemic or pandemic has happened, the meetings have been fewer and farther between. Or further between, as it were. But I'm actually trying to do something. I'm trying to become the hero of my own mythology, my own story. And that's what all of this talk that I've done for including all the silences, 43 minutes now, all of this talk, these were thoughts that I've been having. And it's frustrating, because I get on Mastodon and I see my anarcho-communist friends, and they complain all the time about things, but nothing, I mean, what, no one's posting anything about what they've done recently. If you're an agorist, what have you done? Do you have anything to show for your philosophy? It's one thing, I'm constantly reminded of, like, the Christian communities. They have so much to show for their, well, some of them. I guess not all of them do. Some are just people that go in, it's like going to work, punch the time card, going to church. But there's so many out there. They have so much to show for their philosophy of Christianity. And it's not a dissimilar thing, this idea of Christianity and anarchy and any other, if you're a Republican or Democrat, there's that as well. It's not dissimilar at all to things like Christianity or Islam or any other ideology, because all of these things, they're all informative to the mind of how you may think life should be. They all contribute to your worldview. Say you're a Christian, that's going to contribute to your worldview, whether you like it or not. Or say you're a Muslim, same thing. Whatever you learn through that, even if you're maybe you're not as devout as somebody else, it's still going to inform you to a certain extent. And then you get to choose if you act out the mythology, if you act out the hero story. And if you choose not to, then you know what? That's fine. That's fine. You can do that. You don't have to act out the hero mythology of your own story. But in the end, I think that's what gives us meaning, is becoming that hero. That's why people are so drawn to the hero stories, the hero myths. People love to watch the Marvel movies because there are heroes in there. They love to watch, well, any kind of movie. You love to read a book where there's a hero, or at least a protagonist that drives the story forward, instead of, I mean, would you enjoy reading a book where it's just, and maybe you would, but it's just the humdrum life, nothing gets done, and the world falls apart, and there's no hero to that story. Because that's the story that we're living right now. There is no hero. There's no superhero to come save the day, because you are the hero. You are that superhero. You are Iron Man, or you are whoever, the Hulk, or I don't know. I'm not really a Marvel movie buff. I don't know much about them. But you are the hero. You are the Sigurd of the myth. You are the one that slays the dragon. Or you could be, at least. And maybe that dragon is just like our mythical story of the pothole in your road. Maybe that's the dragon. Well, no, I guess that wouldn't be the dragon. It would be the city government that would be the dragon. It doesn't have to be you taking on all of society, which is what I see so many people trying to do all at once, with their tweets and their memes. It's you tackling a single instance of evil, or what you perceive as evil. That's all. That's all it is. So I'll wrap up this episode here, because I think that gets across the point, or at least the thoughts. And this is, I guess you can almost say this is kind of a, what would you call it, an audio log, an audio blog. This is just something that's been going through my head as I continue looking up sources on Chapter 2. And as I watched things on TV, and it was just something I really wanted to get to it. And I was going to wait until after we finished the book, or after we finished this chapter at least, to make an episode about this. But since I'm not done with Chapter 2, it's a very good timing, as it gives me something to do to fill in on this week. So I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please let me know. Let me know on Mastodon. That's where I'm mostly at. I try to pitch other things, but Mastodon's really my home. And that's dobbs.town/@Herag, H-E-R-A-G. Of course, that'll be in the show notes. And you can reach out to me on other things, like on Odyssey, you can leave comments on the video. Or I just recently saw there's like a comment section for the community, which is like on the channel page. You can leave, I guess, random comments there. So just give me a shout out. Let me know what you think. Let me know what you guys want to hear about after we're done with The Hero with a Thousand Faces. I've already got one plan, but let me know. So that'll do it for this episode. And why don't you try to go out and, or don't even go out, try to live one part of your philosophy this week. If you're an agorist, look into crypto. Or look into growing some plants. I don't know. That seems to be the two big things in agorism right now. If you're an anarcho-communist, look into building a community with your neighbors. And of course, that could go for the agorists as well. If you're an anarcho-capitalist, I don't know, go buy something or something. I don't know. Whatever. So, all right, that'll do it for this week. Thanks for listening.